medium good connector. So I wonder if you ran into any problems along these lines, Eric. K2EJ, K2RAW.
K2RAW, K2EJ. Actually, the mechanical design of the connector is pretty much, well, let's see, about 1974, 75, I think. Yeah, they pretty much had that straightened out, but the real problem, even with the older connectors, was not the connectors themselves, it was the humans putting them on.
What was the biggest problem? You didn't use the tool correctly, or didn't strip back the outer jacket correctly, didn't tighten it enough, didn't clean up the ends, the burrs. What do you believe was the biggest error? And was the error creating poor grounding or poor weatherproofing?
The rubber O-rings were never a problem, so it wasn't a matter of stuff getting wet. It was usually cutting the shield back too far. There's a tool that you would put into the center to extract the foam, because most of these were foam dielectrics, you know, half inch and three-quarter inch truncated. They would use the tool improperly, cause it to swell, then they'd have to force the back end of the connector on, the barrel would never fit properly, so it would literally slide out of the connector.
Yeah, I think you're describing a coring tool, and I own one of those three-quarter inch coring tools. It does a nice, neat job if you do it correctly. So I think you're saying, just like you and I putting a new G21 type N connector on the end of a piece of RG8 or RG214, it's an art form. It takes care and cleanliness and worrying about the fine details to properly install a connector. And I guess occasionally somebody would hire a gorilla, so to speak, a man who really didn't take pride in his work. And maybe there's also an additional problem in which he's getting some kind of an incentive for how many miles of cable he lays per day. And therefore, miles become more important than the quality of the connectors he puts in. Is this close to what some cable companies run into, Eric, K2LAW?
Roger, Dick. Now, you got to remember, they paid minimum wage. And, you know, bucket trucks? In those days, forget it. With gas funds.
Wow. Were any of the people ever injured because of the gas slipping out of a telephone pole?
Now, I can remember pulling pieces of wood out of my stomach.
QED. And I suspect that pieces of wood could have gotten into other portions of your clothing. And no fun. And these poles with creosote that you're climbing up, it's getting on your clothing, getting on your hands, getting on the lanyard around the tower, getting into the gas, getting onto your shoes, getting into the tools, getting onto your gloves. Sounds like pleasant work. So at 18, was that one of your first jobs in the broadcast electronics, Eric? Go ahead. That's how you cut your teeth in broadcast?
No, I never considered cable broadcast. Actually, I was working for my first job in electronics, really. My first broadcast thing, I wouldn't call it a job. I was in the Plainview School District. We had the first licensed ITFS television, educational television thing. You know, 2.4 gig microwave, part of what is now the defunct ITFS band, been reallocated for, some of it's been reallocated for first responder, right smack in the middle of the band. It's mixed use now. It used to be MMDS for a lot of folks. And that was wireless cable. I guess what? I was just 14, 15. And I was taking care of the TV station in the school district. And during the electronics courses in high school, I was just sitting in the corner fixing all the TV sets that everybody brought in. And occasionally when the teacher wasn't around, I'd, you know, help everybody with their work. But I worked for a guy who was, we actually put the microwave systems in at Grumman between Plant 5 and Calverton and a few other things. So I was doing microwave stuff the day I turned 18.
Does that mean you were involved in that double tower out in Hop Park? Not Hop Park, Irandia?
No, I never made my way up there. I took the equipment down at the bottom.
And you said that your first work was installing the communication system in a school, ITFS. Did that stand for Instructional Television Fixed Service?
That's it. And I was 15.
Wow. And that was around the time that I was doing radio and television repair, trying to get enough money to go to college. And another guy who was doing that is Mel. Hey, Mel, tell us what's going on in Manhattan Beach. Sounds like you're still heavily involved with loop antennas, and I think that's going to go on for a while. I'm not convinced you've squeezed everything out of that one yet. And it looks like Barry is joining your effort. How many more guys from Long Island are you going to make into loopers? Boy, you guys are looped. K2KEY, K2RIW, the TechNet.
This is K2KEY. Before I go get into this, did Paul W.S.U.N. check in with maybe he wants to say something about the, you know, state division that we come up with here every week, you know, information? Or maybe we turn it over to him. Did he check in over?
Paul, are you available? W.S.U.N., K2RIW, the TechNet?
At 8 o'clock, this is the W2UL repeater.
Yeah, I think Mel didn't, I think Paul did not check in tonight, and possibly this is a slow news week for NASA. That's a guess on my part. You've got it, Mel.
Okay, this is K-E-Y. All right, very good. Yeah, well, I'll tell you something. It more or less to the point because, you know, this is nothing new, this loop, receiving loop. I mean, this has been around since, God knows, maybe almost since the early days of radio. And yet, it's been also overlooked. Gee, that nobody really did any really in-depth work with it. You know, you see once in a while an article in one of the magazines about, you know, a page or something about making a loop or something like that, but nothing really emphasized what it can do. Now, I find that on 75 meters that the people that have room enough for a beverage, they're using beverage antennas for receiving on 75 meters. They said that's the ultimate for receiving. I would assume that if you can put a beverage full wavelength, well, basically, they go from multi-wavelength and beverage antennas. I would assume that, in other words, if you just put a one-wavelength beverage, I don't know if it really will give you what you're really looking for as well as a multi-wavelength beverage, because a number of the guys I've talked to have told me about beverage antennas that they have that are 700, 800, 900 feet long, and they're able to get them close enough. You know, they have the area where they can keep close enough to the ground and to be able to terminate them where there's not too much traffic. So I guess I would say that would be about the ultimate antenna for receiving them. Would I be correct, over?
That's a darn good question. If I compare the fully rotating five-element Yagi, I bet a Japanese amateur, and that thing looks like it's mounted 150 feet in the air, and looks to me like it's a 180-foot-long boom type thing, five-element, full-size, rotating 80-meter beam. And if I compare that to a full-size rhombic or full-size beverage, he's got an advantage over all of us in that he can rotate that thing as long as his rotator doesn't grind up. And I haven't been able to convince him to put a weather vane on it so that it's wind balanced. So I know he's grinding up rotators from time to time. But he may have an advantage. Now, when he peaks it on a particular direction, and if that's the direction where you've got a good rhombic, multiple wavelength rhombic or multiple wavelength of beverage, which one would win out? Darn good question. Guarantee each has its advantages at different times. The beverage is a little bit more vertically polarized. The Yagi is a little bit more horizontal. And even that makes a big variable from time to time. Mel, I just realized I'm going to have to leave you guys. There's something I've got to do between now and tomorrow. You're going to have to take over, sir. Please do. I hope you can. Keep it as long as you like. And dig in as many of these subjects as you'd like to. I'm going to have to leave you. I intend to be back normal time next week. But I'm not going to be available any further tonight, I'm sorry to say. K2KEY, the Vice President and right now, you're the understudy's not the right word, but you're king of the heat right now, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW, clear, leaving for now, and thank you if you can take over, sir.
Okay, Dick, take care. All right. President, Vice President will take over. I'll become Commander-in-Chief. Take care, Dick, and we'll talk to you next week. All right. As I was saying,
good night, Dick.
Discuss any of your problems.
Good night, Barry.
I was going to discuss...
Good night, Barry.
I got it. A chance because I was also teetering between L at a time when we started discussing a little earlier the radial booster angle and how it affects the vertical antenna and its effect on vertical polarized antennas. So we'll leave that for next week. That's a very interesting subject that was brought up. And how the pseudo Brewster angle variation with frequency and dielectric constant and conductivity is a whole subject basically will be this. That needs quite a bit of study. I'm just going to say a few words. There's just a number of maps drawn about ground conductivity of different parts of the United States. And it amazes you. If you look at that, how much the variation is. Tremendous variation. So, all right, we'll leave that for next week. Different will most likely join in on this. So, anybody else have any comments or any of the above or have any questions? This is H2KY and Limark TechNet.
Boy, it's quiet out there.
Hey, yeah, I was going to interview Barry. I was thought maybe that, somebody wants to join us for this subject. Barry, so what happened? I didn't understand. You started to say something about Comtech. You did order the phasing harness, but he couldn't deliver it. Is that what you're saying? Over.
Not exactly. I ordered it, and, hearing another repeater. Wow. I ordered it, and he said, okay, he's very busy. He will try to fill it within the next 2 or 3 weeks. That was 5 weeks ago, so I guess he will eventually fill it. I tried to reach him yesterday and the day before, got no answer on his phone during business hours, so I don't know whether he's been away for a few days or what, so I'm going to try to get back to him. I'm listening to all you guys, I think the first step in trying to hear, well, for instance, the Australians, they're a problem. New Zealand and Australia, that's a tough, tough problem from here. I'm barely hearing them. Years ago, I used to hear them better. I'm not sure why that is. But we're looking across the whole United States, everybody's signal. I guess if I could get rid of some static from the back and the sides, maybe these guys would get a little louder. So basically, that's what I'm trying to do. It isn't so much a matter of gain. I'm not trying to get gain anymore. I have enough signal strength, so what I want to do is try to wring these guys out of the noise, however that can be done. And I think the first step is going to be a phased array, and maybe, I don't know whether your approach would help, I'm not sure. It's really tough, because these signals are very, very weak for some reason in this area. Maybe if I just, as you guys were saying, if I just wait a month, they'll be better. It may just be the way they're arriving in New York,
We're going into the summertime now. We're going to get into the warm weather, and, the lightning capital of the world is down in Florida. That's where they go down, every year to do their experiments, because they can almost pick out a spot where they know lightning seems to be always occurring every couple of days. They send up these balloons, they can try and experiment of making the fine carbon that lightning will create. So they put these balloons up there with a wire. I don't know if you've seen that experiment, which brings the lightning right down into this pot filled with a type of very fine earth and to try to turn it into carbon. They do that experiment down in Florida because they, like I say, you can get thunderheads almost every day of the week during the summer months down there. So with all that going on, and out west, you know, they don't miss much of the tornado and the thunderstorm activity out there either. So when we get into this part of the time of the year, on 75 meters, you're going to find a lot of nice G's and say, my God, I better shut this thing off before it, you know, breaks my eardrum, because the noise level is phenomenal. I don't know if you've ever listened to 75 in the past year during that summertime, especially when we've had a very active year with thunderstorms over.
Oh, yeah, we're starting to get it now. Actually, last night it wasn't bad. This morning it was not bad at all, but 2 days ago, it was horrendous. It was just nothing but crash after crash, and that's that also gets everybody scared off 160. 160 in the summer is a pretty dead band for that very reason. I understand what you're saying. What I'm afraid is going to happen is they're going to get a satellite up there before next winter. So, you know, once the satellite's up, my attention is going to be drawn away from my 75-meter experiment, you know. Right now I'm getting some phenomenal results. It's just amazing. Now, I got to tell you, I'm able to switch between the horizontal and the vertical, and of course they're not compromised antennas. I don't need radios under the vertical because of the way I built it, so things are working well. And I can tell you, I can almost tell you that a guy is in Europe just by switching from one antenna to the other. The vertical favors Europe every time. I get 1.5 to 2x units improvement, and on weak signals, it's very dramatic. I cannot understand what the guy's saying. I switch over to the vertical, and wow, it's like you just hit the big switch. You can understand him. He's making sense. That's dramatic. You take a station in California, it's always better on the horizontal. Every time, better on the horizontal. You take stuff in Florida or the Midwest, it doesn't make any difference. We're down in South America, I could switch from one to the other, can't tell the difference.
This one guy gets on around 3600, 3.600, around there, plus or minus. He gets on a few nights a week. You hear him from Massachusetts. And he calls CQDX and he gets answers almost immediately. They seem to wait around for, I guess, certain stations that they hear very, you know, very well in Europe. And I listen to the stations that he comes back to. And the number of the stations, I don't hardly hear them on the loop, my full-wavelength loop. I think it is a bit of a cloud warmer, even though a lot of people say that was a misnomer. But I think it is a bit of a cloud warmer. It's great for, you know, communications around a few hundred miles, good ground wave, you know, like my friend in Pennsylvania, things like that. But it's not really a DX antenna. I think it'd be most likely. In fact, I think I just said it years ago with my dipole up at about 60, 65 feet. Now, with the vertical, this guy used Massachusetts. Vertical, and I gotta say, he's giving them 5-9 reports. Now, if I listen to them on my receiving loop, I hear them better than I do on my full wavelength transmitting loop. I definitely hear them, and they are all basically, those signals are being received from Europe. I can almost say indefinitely. I have tried a number of different angles and all, but it seems like the European signal, for some reason, always coming in vertically, even though I'm sure most of them are on dipoles. Barry, go ahead.
That's exactly what I found. Same thing. The European signals and the ones from the old Soviet Union, that area, everything comes in vertical from that. And what I've been told is that's not going to stay that way. What I've been told, what you say, what Dick says, what everybody says is that that's seasonal, and it will eventually change, and they may find they're better on the horizontal. I don't know. Right now, they are reliably better on the vertical. Now, the stations that you can hardly hear, my point is, if you can hear them at all, and you've got a phased array like this guy does up in Boston, the verticals, which is what I want to do. The front-to-back ratio eliminates all this United States stuff and all the static. You know, it does not all of it, but it certainly goes a long way to reduce it. And that's why he's working these people. That's why he's giving them 5.9s and we're just barely hearing them. I'm thinking I may not get that advantage down towards the southwest, towards New Zealand, because I think at that time, I'm really not getting a lot from Europe. It's not coming in very much. I think what my problem is, I'm looking across the whole United States and picking up thunderstorms, picking up everything, and there's no way I'm going to eliminate that. I haven't come up with a solution for that one.
Okay, now, when you start talking about, you know, working these guys out for the Pacific area and all, you got to remember, the 75 meters is very highly dependent on the D layer. And during the daytime, you know, their sun is up when we're in, you know, as I say, it's getting on around 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. Like Australia is late in the afternoon the following day. So they are not going to be able to get much on 75 meters in daylight. Now, the Europeans, remember, if he gets on, like, you know, when I get on around 11:30, gets on around midnight and so, giving 5 hours approximately ahead, it's still darkness in Europe. The sun has not risen yet. And so he's still, you know, in a situation where he still has somewhat decent propagation on 75 meters before the sun rises, Barry. And this is not something, that's why I only hear him work in Europe. I never hear anyone calling in from anywhere else, you know, from the west of Pacific and all. The only time you used to hear them years ago, because I know when I start hearing the California stations, and then I hear the Hawaiian stations being weak, and then pick up with the Hawaiian station. I hear the California stations then talking to Hawaii and places like that. But I didn't hear them yet. Then I started to hear them, and then when I was able to find work, I worked a number of specific stations on 75 meters. But like I say, when you have a situation, you've got to understand that because of the D layer conditions and all, we're not going to be able to get that kind of coverage in those areas. It's not so much anything other than this is a, you know, way the nature of things are on 75 meters, over.
Yeah, I'm finding that, actually, I'm not hearing the Australians at 11 or 12, or New Zealand. I start to hear them at around 5:30, 6 in the morning. That's when I hear everybody else working them. I'm really barely hearing them. I find, when I was a kid, I used to hear them at 3 in the morning. I used to get up at 2, 3 in the morning, and I would work them. They would hear me. So I haven't heard them at 2, 3 in the morning anymore. So something's different. But by around 6 a.m., I start to hear everybody else working them. Now, I'm hearing people in Florida, and the 3s in Canada, the VE3s in Canada, are working them, and I'm not hearing them. So I guess maybe Florida is a little more, you know, to the east or something. I don't know, but gotta look at a map. But I think by the time these guys are working them, I think it's too late for us already. The sun's coming up, and they're getting too weak for us.
Yes, that's right. When I was younger, and I used to get up all the crazy hours to work all these different things on CX, you know, bed, and try to get, you know, everything that there is to work, and find out when they operate and all that stuff. Oh, boy, I go through a whole rigmarole many times. But, yes, that's the point. 5 o'clock in the morning is before the sun hears us to rise. It's setting there. It's nighttime in the Pacific. So it's still dark in the Pacific. So, you know, it's a situation then that's ideal for going that way rather than going towards Europe, because Europe is now in the sunlight. At 5 o'clock in the morning here puts Europe almost around, 10, 11 o'clock in the morning on the average, somewhere between 10 and midday local times there. So that's not going to be good for Europe at 5 o'clock or so in the morning, but it would be, yes, ideal for the Pacific, Barry, over.
Yeah, but my problem is by the time the Pacific starts coming in here, it's too late. They begin to come in, you barely hear them, and then the sun rises and it's gone. So I haven't had much luck. However, as they say, I hear the guys down in Florida, they're working them, they're giving them 5-9. So something's different between Florida and New York at 5:30 in the morning.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Down in Florida. It's hard to explain. I've heard that a number of times, that the guys down in Florida, maybe because Florida is only approximately 300 miles wide when you get down towards Miami, between the East Coast and the, you know, the, in other words, it's basically just surrounded almost by water on three sides when you're down towards the southern part of Florida, Barry. In fact, one guy told me that the best place he ever operated was when he was down in the Keys. He lived down in the Keys. And he said, boy, they are really sitting on water. You know, 360 degrees around the Keys are water. So maybe that has some kind of effect, or maybe because it's further into the southern hemisphere, because right now the DX that's coming through mostly is the just before the bands go out on a higher frequency, is towards the equator. Yeah, you know, equatorial type of communication that seems like many times like 20 meters will be basically dead everywhere else except straight down to the, towards the equator, Barry, over.
Okay, have you ever come up with a way to make your loops unidirectional? So they wouldn't be bidirectional. Have you worked on that problem?
Oh, not really, because I need the direction. Basically, this is why I need it. I need it to really get rid of... if you saw it, you'd say, you'd sit there and you'd say, I don't believe what I'm seeing. I will take that noise level, and I'll put you on a pair of headphones. And I want you also to watch the scope and everything very carefully. And you're going to see that you will move this antenna, the noise, like, for instance, let's say the noise loop. You will move that noise loop, once it's peaked, on that noise source, and you will move it to high speed. Sometimes you'll nudge it a little either way, and you'll say, oh, my, if you actually were to tap the antenna, it will make, at times, will make the difference between, the noise will pop up maybe 3, 4, 5 dB just by nudging it. It's amazing how sharp that could be on a noise pole, especially if it, of course, if it's repetition. So I needed it for that. I got to null that noise. That's why I got the loops. I got a variable condenser on each loop, and I peak that, first of all, on the receive signal, on the noise signal, I peak it, and then I move that antenna and on the noise source, peak it on the noise source, I mean, and then the phasing control then comes alive. It seems that if you don't have that antenna really peaked on the noise source, the phasing control, that's why I think these noise squashes all got a bad reputation, because, you know, they were telling you, oh, you just use a little random piece of wire to pick up the noise, blah, 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 and it'll work. It won't work, Barry. I see that. It just doesn't have the effect that you think your noise squashes should have. Go ahead.
Yeah, the station very weak. I think it was KB1OQD. I'm probably wrong. N2MB.
Yeah, it is KB1OQD. I was just doing a radio check there to see if I was getting out on 2 watts to you guys from here.
Okay, you're getting out, but not very well. It's steady, but it's weak. But I can't understand you. It is. Q4 and Q5, it's there, but you could use another 6 dB, make it a lot easier on our ears.
Roger, I believe it's Barry, and it's Bob. Poor Rob, I know we got a lot of Bobs out here. Now, I was just checking out my curiosity here when I was talking to Dick earlier. and I'll get out of here real quick there. I just needed to satisfy my curiosity because I was just only pushing 2 watts out of this rig there, and we were talking about the HT there, and that was pushing out 5. If I can make it out there from here with 2 watts, I think I might be able to make it a little clearer on the 5 watts and the WT with a base antenna. But anyway, hey, we thank you guys again very much here, and we'll back out of here, and we'll let you guys continue there. Thank you for the test. KB1OQD, and we'll be clear.
Okay, whatever you did it right, because you were about 75-80% quieting that time. Much better.
Yeah, I went to 15 watts that time, but like I said, if I was going 2 watts there, saying if I went up to the 5 watts on the WT there, I may be able to just cut it over to you guys better there. Okay, again, like I said, 73s, and we're out of here, it looks like.
Okay, okay. And my name is Barry, I guess you know that, don't? Okay, 73s. Thanks for stopping in, by the way. Okay, well, I have to go get my daughter now. I might be able to talk to you if I want to get in the car. That works well. Yeah, I found they can hear me now, Mel, because now I've got the 900, 1,000 watts, and that's the big thing, you know. Run a lot of power, and they suddenly hear you. So I'm down to how well can I hear them, and I'm looking for every little trick in the book now to make them more readable. My problem here hasn't, on 75 meters anyway, has not been noise. It's not noise. It's atmospheric static, of course, which everybody gets, and, of course, offending signals. You know, that's been my big problem. Looking across the United States, you're bound to hear signals in the way, you know, and how do you get rid of them, right? I'm thinking maybe this noise squasher circuit may help to get rid of some of this stuff coming in across the U.S.
Yeah, Roger, Barry. Well, I can say the noise squasher is a disappointment. I know it was a disappointment initially with me. I didn't see out of it what I expected. And as I said to you about 2 weeks ago, with the one of the thunderstorms that was rolling up over Pennsylvania, my friends would not get on the air because of the fear of the lightning over its head over there in Pennsylvania. And I listened. I could hear it really coming in quite strong. And I was just about to give up, and then I just happened to hear that other station down south. And when I turned over to the receiving booth and peeked the guy down south, I said, help me, did not hear any sign of that noise from the west. So I would say to you, I would bet that if you went ahead, yes, and combined that noise washer with your outside antenna as it's set up for, but make yourself something better than just a random piece of wire or maybe a short piece of whip for the noise source. In other words, something like a loop. Very easy to put together a loop for 75 meters. It's more of a carpentry job than it is, you know, an electronic job. Make something like that up, a directional loop like that, and I think you will have exactly what you're looking for, Barry. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I have another 75 meter. I have the inverted V out there, which is a perfectly good receiving antenna. You know what the problem is I'm running into with that one? I'm getting so much coupling between the antennas that if I transmit into antenna A and put a dummy load and a watt meter on antenna B, if I put 100 watts into antenna A, I could see 50 watts coming back into my into my dummy load and antenna B. That's a lot of coupling. And I think if I transmit even once into that antenna, I'm going to blow that noise squasher.
I had that problem. Yeah, and now I've got the loop antenna sitting in the shack with me. And that's why I'm using the Collins 75A4, real good receiver, but it's, you know, all tubes. Because it's a much more forgiving than coupling. I wouldn't take a chance of coupling into one of the new transceivers, most likely, you know, with a kilowatt rig plus sitting there. I use the Collins kilowatt. What happened is I blew this FET. I popped them out, and also I put in new FETs with shields on them, and all. I went through a whole deal there. And try it, put diodes in on the, across the inputs, and a whole business to see if I can. But this is just a coupling, not from the antenna, which is 45 feet up, this is just a coupling, I think, in a shack from stray, you know, RF that's in the shack. I blew the FET and the noise washer. So, you know, definitely, if you have it up there, you're going to have to do something to protect it. You'll kill it. All right, you got to go. So, all right, we'll pick you up. I'm on 75 every, you know, I'll be on tomorrow night if you want to join us, do any, you know, testing. N2MB, K2KEY.
Okay, Mellis, what is it, 3717? Is that what it is?
Plus or minus, if, you know, it's busy, we go up or down. If somebody's using the frequency, go up a few or down a few over.
Okay, and it's, what, 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock?
11:30, right after the news, over.
Okay, I just got to write down 11:30. The rest I seem to remember. I'll be there tomorrow night, and I'll be playing around with my antennas, because I now have two. And, you know, until I put the second element up, I'm going to leave this antenna there as a test antenna. That's working out really good. That was a great idea to have a standard, which is the old inverted B. That's a beautiful standard. It's working beautifully. The idea was great because I am able to make subtle comparisons between the antenna, and I know I'm getting the right results. I know this is real. So, but the problem, as I say, is the sandwich coupling between the antennas. That I don't know how MFJ designed this thing. I don't know whether the secondary receiving antenna is disconnected on transmit or not. I got to look at a diagram of this thing. If it's disconnected on transmit, I won't blow it. But if they leave that antenna receiving, you know, they have a little relay in that thing. You transmit through it, and, you know, you go to the primary antenna. If they're thoughtful enough to disconnect that second antenna, then I won't blow it. But the coupling between those things would surely blow it if they didn't do that.
Exactly. You know, I don't know what they did. The original design of it, I'm trying to picture it. I have the original design. I know who licensed it. I don't know if he licensed it or whatever, but he got the offer from them to, you know, remember Chase, to manufacture his design. And in his original design, he had the relay. Now, the relay, I don't remember the relay disconnecting the noise antenna. If I'm not mistaken, it bypasses the transmit receive antenna, you know, the main antenna. I don't think it went, nope, come to think of it, I don't remember seeing anything like that. If it was true to the design, I don't think so, Barry, over.
Okay, then that would be a fatal flaw. I am going to check that carefully. I am absolutely positive that on my very first transmission, I will take out that FET. Gotta be. So I gotta look that over really careful. I can't believe he didn't think of that, because somebody else has to have that problem. If you have two really good antennas, which I do, you gotta have coupling. You know, it's a given.
Because the way they touted this product, that the receiving noise antenna that they just said, a random piece of wire thrown on the floor of the shack. That's it. They didn't design that for you to have an antenna, two antennas outside, Barry. It was never intended. That's not the idea of the design. So I can almost swear to it. I may be wrong, but I can check it tomorrow night. I'll have the schematic in the shack. I'm not in the shack right now. If I pull it right out of the drawer there, and I'll tell you right away. I don't think so, because I think he was faithful, MFJ, to the original design. From what I understand from other people that purchased them, that the schematic is almost like an overlay from one, the way they use the schematic is drawn over.
Okay. Well, then I will definitely have to modify it, because it ain't going to hold up like this. One transmission, I'm sure it would be over. Very interesting. I don't understand why they would have thought that a random piece of wire would have worked. My opinion is, if you can't hear the offending signal good, you can't use it for anything. It's got to be just as good as it is in the main antenna.
Exactly, it takes the case Wi-Fi D. Exactly, but that's not the way it's been advertised. In fact, even in the original article, it is always good for most all cases. It's just a piece of wire or small, you know, whip antenna sitting in the shack is sufficient. Never was any mention of any kind of loop, directional loop, or any kind of antenna outside. There's no mention of that at all. It seems like that was not his intention at all to even to include that as a possible way of, you know, picking up noise. So I don't know. I think it was just something that wasn't looked into carefully enough because, well, let's put it this way. Again, that noise washer didn't live up to its expectations unless you really have something to peak that noise. And I gave up. I originally built it as a project, and I thought, oh, boy, this is really going to be the thing. And I was so disappointed. It wound up, it was sitting in a closet, I bet you, maybe 10 years or more over.
Yes, well, I originally had this thing. I used it for about a week, and as you say, I didn't have a good outside antenna on it, didn't have good results, but in theory, it's got to work. You look at it in theory, you say, there's some reason why this isn't working. I mean, theoretically, this has got to do it, you know? And the reason is just what you said. The reason is because they just don't have the right antenna lines. They're not thinking straight. The antenna has to address the phase of the incoming signal, the strength of the incoming signal, everything. And I got to go. I got to go. I got to get my daughter. N2MB, Rockaway Beach.
Okay, catch you tomorrow night. Yep, exactly. The phase control had no effect when I originally tried it out, and I said, that's why you had a lot of comments even from following articles that guys wrote in that the thing does not, it's not a working thing, I don't know where you get the idea it's going to work, blah, 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 and so on and so forth. So they didn't delve into it really the way they should. All right, catch you tomorrow night. Anybody else would like to make any comments, any of us above, before we close the nest? This is K2KEY with the Limehawk Tech Net.
Okay, good night, Mel. I'm out of here in 2MB.
Bringing us, and we'll do it again hopefully next Sunday night, same time, 8 o'clock here on the Limehawk repeater. And everybody have a great week. And it's been a pleasure as always, and I'll try to answer the emails as they come. I'll just keep it in the realm of amateur radio. And we'll hope to join you next week. 73 to all. This is K2KEY. Good night to all.